On this week's show, we welcome Gail Potratz back in our classroom technology-focused episode of the Wells Tech Podcast, and we'll be looking at a Web 2.0 classroom management tool called Schoology. All kinds of cool stuff available for teachers who want to interact with their students online, posting assignments online, and allowing parents even to get into the act. All coming up next on the Wells Tech Podcast. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Wells Tech Podcast. This one is episode 212 for Wednesday, November 30th, 2011. My name is Martin Spriggs, and I'm very happy that you decided to join us. We have two lovely ladies joining us for Classroom Technology Day, of course, as always, Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin, and saying goodbye to November. Hard to believe.
Yes. Just flew by. And I'm looking forward to some of our shows coming up in December, which we'll talk a little bit about later in the show. But before we get to that stuff, we probably should introduce our semi-regular classroom technology correspondent, Gail Potratz from New London, Wisconsin. Good morning, Gail.
Good morning, Martin and Sally and everyone. Nice to be here again today.
Good to have you. Those of you that were with us last month for the Classroom Technology-focused show, we had Jason Schmidt on, and we're kind of alternating every other month and getting different perspectives. And Gail teaches 8th grade and is also the technology director up at New London, which is a good-sized school and heavily involved in Web 2.0 technologies. And the topic of the day really came from you, Gail, and an interview you were able to have with somebody very familiar with a product called Schoology.
And, that's right.
And maybe before we jump into an in-depth discussion, you could maybe provide at least a high-level description of what Schoology is. That's Schoology. I think it's .com, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. What's
Rather
Schoology?
A strange-sounding
it is.
Name,
right.
Really, and one that doesn't run off the tip of your tongue.
You almost want to say Schoology, but that's not correct.
What I say 9 times out of 10.
Okay.
So Schoology is a course management tool that connects the collaborative and social nature to it. It's got an interface much like similar to Facebook, mm-hmm. where people can connect with each other and also with the teacher. There's a discussion tool. There's a Dropbox where you can hand in assignments. There's a grade book. It has many of the features that allow you to have a class. And I use this. I decided to try this year because I like having a place where everything is all in one spot. When you do a lot of project-based learning, I like to have all the directions, all the rubrics, all the videos that you want the kids to watch, everything in one place. So that's what got me interested in trying Schoology.
There you did it. There
and
you did
I had
so did you
heard about it some years ago from Jason Schmidt, actually.
Oh,
and
really?
Looked at it a little bit and decided that I would take the plunge this year. And I just have been using it through the first part of this school year. And after my conversation with Beth, an interview, I really do have a lot of ideas on how I'm going to improve the way I am using it, and looking forward to developing the use of more of the tools that she talked about that I, at this time, am not using. I find it to be just a wonderful tool for management of material. And it also is a good tool to communicate with parents as well as students.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you'll find that her interview, the interview I did with her, really gives you a lot of good perspective on the features that are involved in this tool.
So maybe before we dig a little bit deeper, maybe we should talk about what it isn't a replacement for, just to put this in context. Because I think a lot of schools have student information systems, like
yes.
PowerSchool or Infinite Campus, or there's a whole bunch of them at this point. And most schools, I think, are moving that direction. That's not what this is, correct?
No, it is not. It has similarities in that it has a grade book.
Mm-hmm.
But PowerSchool does communicate grades and attendance to parents, but PowerSchool does not contain the lessons themselves.
Right.
And Schoology has that added feature that it is a course content tool.
Okay. So it really focuses on the educational experience,
not the both of those things.
So it focuses on the educational, not the administrative. Is that fair?
Yes.
Okay.
One other important difference is the price tag.
Right.
Actually, Schoology is a free product. You can invest in some paid-for options to have more of a campus-wide implementation. But for a Lutheran elementary school, for instance, I don't think you'd ever need to go the paid-for route.
Mm-hmm.
So as opposed to many of the student information systems, obviously, there's some cost associated with those.
So how do they stay afloat? Are there ads that you have to deal with, Gail or Sally?
Actually, no.
I don't think so. Hmm. No?
No.
I don't know. It's a mystery.
I do not notice any ads. I mean, I'm working in there quite a bit, and I really – there may be a banner at the top once in a while, but
so
nothing
really
that's very distractive,
on
obviously.
And these enterprise accounts where you can pay more. So what it's comparable to? What's it comparable to? What are some of the other products maybe that our listeners might be familiar with that would they kind of put this in the right category?
Well, we've talked before about Edmodo,
mm-hmm.
and I think Edmodo is probably closest to Schoology. It also has kind of that Facebook feel, allows you to upload things, share things, be interactive, had discussions and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other extreme would be a course management system like Moodle or Blackboard or whatever that would allow you to get a lot more extensive in your online offerings and things.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And those are probably the big three. There's a brand new one called School Force that I haven't had a chance to take a look at other than think, oh, that looks just like Schoology. So I'm going to be looking at that one soon.
Mm-hmm. And Gail, describe a little bit about how you use it in your work there at New London.
Well, I use it, like I said, to contain all the material, links to websites, videos can be embedded right in the text area,
mm-hmm.
so the kids don't even have to go to a place. It's right there. So you can link text items and multimedia items, write out pages of directions, attach mm-hmm. rubrics. You can make folders. Like I usually make a folder for each project that we're doing and put all that material in there in a nice organized way so the kids all have that at their disposal, either at school or at home.
Mm-hmm.
Parents also can have access to that through their code that they can get so they can go in and see what they're doing. That's one thing I like a lot better, a difference of the other management systems is although in final or PowerSchool, parents can go in and see the grades and see the teacher comments on the grades, but they really don't see what the assignment or
right.
what they're learning. And to me as a parent, that'd be really cool to actually see the projects they're doing while they're doing them.
Right,
working
in line.
So I like
right.
that.
So do the kids use this while they're in the classroom, or is this outside of the classroom where they're in there?
Both.
Okay.
I still do. I mean, it's a face-to-face class, so it's not like they're online doing the whole class. It's just that the materials are there. There's a discussion area.
Mm-hmm.
Beth talks about how she uses that very effectively in her high school setting. I think my history teacher partner will use that as we get into the year. He's going to be gravitating to that and using that tool a lot. I primarily do most of the discussion we do. I don't require them to do any discussion when we're not in the classroom.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But you could if you wanted to.
So do you
but
have...
It's a face-to-face class, so I want, obviously, that component to be the major component.
Sure. So do you have a one-to-one initiative there, or do kids have computers in the classroom at your school?
We do in eighth grade for several years. We've had our version of one-to-one.
Okay.
Every child has their own computer.
Mm-hmm. That wouldn't be a requirement if a school wanted to implement Schoology.
No, but I think it is a push for it because, mm-hmm. after all, if you want this to be all the time available, you do have to provide the equipment so that it can be all the time available to all students.
So are you having kids submit assignments through it then?
At this point, I am not, because we've been a Google Docs user for so long, and we have our, you know, way that we hand in things, mm-hmm. that way, share things and whatnot. I did some playing around with Sally's pretend course that she created in Schoology just to play with the Dropbox. Mm-hmm. You can hand things in right from Google Docs.
Yeah, I noticed that. You could connect your account and do your homework in Google Docs and then submit the doc. Yeah, that was very slick.
I couldn't do it in the student account. Because you have to have your own student account rather than just the generic one. Because obviously it has to be linked to your Google Docs account.
Sure.
But that feature's cool. I'm not using that feature yet just because it's another procedure and we were so comfortable with the other procedure. We're still doing that. But so I do grading in it. I give online quizzes. Mm-hmm. And then you can – it's kind of neat. You can even do my quizzes or tests will have some multiple choice and some essay. And the essay, of course, isn't self-corrected or computer-corrected. The other multiple choice and such are corrected for you, which is really nice. Mm-hmm. And then the essay, you can go in and I make my comments and essay and everything right in there, and they can click on a link and see the comments on their written work as well as their objective scores. Right. And then, of course, since we use PowerSchool, at the end of the quarter, I just average the grades in one and put a generic grade for that into PowerSchool, and it gets figured in with the whole quarter then for PowerSchool.
So, Sal, you put together a sample course, as Gail mentioned. How was the setup process for you? What did you observe as you went through it?
Actually, it went very smoothly, very quickly. I just needed to specify a grading period. That's kind of the crux of how they organize things. And I looked a little bit at their help, and it seems like carrying over courses between grading periods can be a little bit of a learning curve, at least. Mm-hmm. I specified a really long grading period, like 10 years.
We're slow learners here.
Yeah. A lot to learn. But That's really how everything is structured, is around that grading period. Once you have a grading period set up, then you set up the course. You do have to specify section titles. And I assume, and I think at one point I encountered some things where, do you want to share this across other sections of the course? So it's set up right away to divide your kids into groups and be able to easily do group-based initiatives as well. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you could just have one section if that's all you have a need for, but you do have to give your course a name and give it a section title, and then you're off and running. You can add assignments, quizzes, links, discussions, photo albums, and just web page type material. Mm-hmm. And I went ahead and put in samples of each of those so that our listeners could go out and poke around and see how it works.
Sure. Well, why don't we go ahead and play the interview? Gail, would you mind setting this up for us, introduce who Beth is and how this all came together as how you got the interview?
Sure. Beth Sanders is not associated at all in an official way with the company, although I did speak with someone at the company who gave me her name. Hmm. So I got her name as a user of Schoology, and you will be able to tell she is a very excited user. So Jason Schmidt actually had directed me to Crystal Grandison, who is involved with the company, and I emailed with her, and she gave me Beth's name.
Okay.
And Beth is a second-year teacher, so a digital native, and mm-hmm. she speaks to that. And she teaches in Birmingham, Alabama, in a high school setting, and has students there in which she uses Schoology to manage her course content and do some grading as well. So she does. She is a very faithful proponent, mm-hmm. Excited proponent of this. So I think you'll enjoy listening to what she has to say about it.
Okay, let's listen to Beth Sanders.
Thank you.
Good morning, Beth. It's nice to welcome you to the Wells Tech Podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
Well, we're excited to have you. And why don't we begin by having you tell us a little bit about yourself and what your connections to Schoology are?
Okay. I am a second-year social studies teacher at Tarrant High School, which is in Birmingham, Alabama. We are a city school, so it's a public school. We are about 3A or 4A. There's about 120 kids in each graduating class, so not too big, not too small. We are fortunate enough to have one-to-one MacBooks, and then I was actually the teacher for a pilot program for one-to-one eye touches. So Schoology kind of came into my life. I am a new teacher, and I'm kind of up on very interested in educational technology. So as soon as I knew I had that access to computers and eye touches and mobile devices, I kind of was on the lookout for something that could create, you know, take the classroom community to an online setting, and kind of ran into Schoology through Twitter. And okay, that's kind of where I am, you know, with it.
Okay, that sounds great. Boy, that sounds like you're really on the cutting edge with your one-on-one programs there. That we've talked a lot about those on the program, so it's interesting to have someone on that's in the middle of doing that right now.
Right.
Do you have any responsibilities officially for technology in your school, or is this just you as an individual teacher bringing this on in your classroom?
I am the unofficial tech guru.
Okay.
Of our school, yes. But no, I'm just a classroom teacher. I don't have any official titles.
Okay. But people come to you, I would guess, and say, oh, how did you get that working? It looks like something I'd like to do.
Yes, I'm constantly the one that is having the tech questions thrown to me, which I take that. I take that role because I think it's important coming in as a new teacher, too, that's kind of born into a digital native situation to kind of take people under my wings and make it kind of my mission to integrate technology at a higher level in every single one of our classrooms because we do have so much tech available.
Right. You have the tech available, so the people need to get up to speed with it, and how fortunate they are to have you there to help them do that. You know, mentoring and showing how technology works for you is often the way that we do get, you know, people that may be a little hesitant involved in it. So I think that's great.
Right.
So you found out about Schoology on Twitter, and what was your main reason for wanting to incorporate that into your classroom?
I did. I was kind of, you know, on a search for finding some type of a Facebook online community hub that could really not only support my classroom, but become a part of my classroom. And I had heard, you know, buzz about Edmodo, and I was following the EdTech hashtag. And then I had a fellow colleague actually read an article about Schoology, and it clicked in my brain that I had heard that. So I went back and did a little research and realize that Schoology is so closely mirrored to Facebook that I knew it was where I wanted to start because buy-in is extremely crucial, especially in a high school. If you can't get the students to believe in the website and to really use it, then I think, you know, every teacher knows that it's not going to be a successful tool to use in your classroom. It has to kind of be something that can be embedded seamlessly, not something that we're worried about or kind of using it on the side, but something that's an everyday thing. So that was the big, aha moment for me with Schoology when I realized how it's not saying that it's like Facebook. It is so similar to Facebook that I knew that students would, be comfortable with it. And then that we could move forward into really embedding it into my classroom.
So do your students use the whole social network appeal of the site too? I think to chat with each other, to connect with each other with the connections made possible there? Or do they use Facebook for that, and then they use Schoology?
Right. I think what I'm trying to do as far as digital citizenship, too, is to show them they all have a Facebook profile. But this idea of having a personal life and a professional life, but that citizenship has to be embedded within both sides of that digital life. So through Schoology, the other big thing is showing them what is expected of a 21st century scholar, a 21st century student online, and that, you know, we can bring up a lot of issues that are going on digitally with cyberbullying and things like that, and we can begin to model and practice what purposeful digital citizenship is and what it looks like and what it doesn't look like. And so my hope was also that by using Schoology that they would begin to change some of their habits on Facebook, like not typing correctly or maybe posting inappropriate videos or, you know, just commenting on someone's status if it's something that has to do with bullying or sharing it out, sure, rather than, you know, being more aware. And I think Schoology gives that outlet because it's a professional site that looks like Facebook, but you have to function professionally on it because your principal can see it, your parents can see it, your teachers are seeing it. So,
right. And your teachers are expecting you to react professionally to the site.
Right.
Right. Very good. So that was your hook, so to speak, to get the kids really to use it. You know, I've been using it. I used to use Wiki Spaces a lot more for, I like a system where it can have everything in one place for the kids. So they can go there, right, if they, you know, the directions for the assignment, the page numbers, some extra research, resource links, especially with when you do project-based learning, you want that all collected in one spot that they can go back to. And that is in itself, you bring up a good point, to get them to feel that that is seamless, that that's where I go, I can always go there. I don't always have to come and ask somebody, this is where all this has been put, you know, for my use. That's some training in itself.
Definitely.
I'm not at the high school level. I'm working with eighth graders, and they haven't done this before. So I have learned that that was something that I didn't prepare for. I just thought once I had it all there and it was all laid out nicely, they would automatically use that. But
right,
that isn't true. They do have to be brought into that. And I like your explanation there of how they gravitated toward that, and that they are using it seamlessly.
Definitely.
Okay. You mentioned that the reasons that you liked it. Would you like to talk about some of the features that you think are the most powerful features that Schoology has to offer?
Definitely. And I do think it's very important, and when I talk to teachers on Twitter or through my blog about Schoology, it's very important to chunk it just like you would do anything with a lesson. You can't just throw it all on there and say, okay, we're doing a discussion and a quiz and all of these things in 1 week. We started very small. I take, at the beginning of school, I take a couple days just to get the kids to get their profile set up. We do a lot of intro activities online where they're, you know, I'm seeing where they are digitally, and I'm also getting to know them through their profiles. So then, and I think that's a very important part of it, and it helps them connect to it. When they have their own individual profile, they can make it individual. They can upload a picture. They can start putting up little statuses that are education related, but are, you also see their personality, which I think is important. And then the first feature that I really fell in love with was the discussion feature. We are really focusing on formative assessment at my school, and I'm 100% bought into formative assessment, but teaching high school and having 155 students, the feedback portion of formative assessment was really frustrating me. I was doing all of these exit slips and these quick writes and these, you know, different levels of Bloom's type checking formatively, but then I wasn't having the time to give them back that feedback that they needed. And I realized if I could post a Schoology discussion, and then I could not only comment individually on students, I could also give group comments. I could then break students down into guided instruction groups from the discussions. And one of the most powerful things is that all of my information, all of my data is saved in that discussion. That discussion isn't going anywhere. So I can go and reteach. I can copy and paste. I can take a screenshot from that discussion. I can pull it up in a parent-teacher conference. But the most powerful thing is being able to see a kid post a response and then to be able to comment directly back to that student and really giving them that, you know, this writing is, it has a purpose, and I'm not only going to read it, I'm going to be able to comment back to you, and then we can build off of that. And seeing the dialogue that created for me was extremely powerful. And then from there, just really, I do a weekly update. So I use that update, which is a lot like a, posting a status on Facebook. And so I'll post any links or resources that we're going to need for that week. I do a Monday through Friday. This is what we're doing. I post our quote of the day every single day. I love that you can embed any videos or pictures. You don't have to click on a link.
Right.
The picture is right there. The video is right there. They can hit play automatically. It really puts... the learning into the students' hands, which is a very crucial 21st century skill to have. Like you said earlier, they're not having to go look all over the internet. It's a one-stop kind of shop, and they can get everything that they need there. So those, the updates and the discussions were the two things that really made me realize, wow, this is going to not only support me, but it's really going to change the way that I'm doing things.
Okay, that's great. I think when you talk about formative assessment, and you talk about the feedback that you can give to students on a daily basis that you can keep track of, go back to, look at it again, see where they're at, is a great thing. Do you use also the actual grading system in Schoology?
If I do a formative assessment, I'm where maybe I posted a video or posted a picture, or they're having to write a response. Mm-hmm. I'll use that quiz test option,
right.
And then I will plug in their grades there, so then they can see them. For the discussions, I usually do a 3-week grade for Schoology discussion, so they just know at the end of the 3 weeks that I'll be posting their averaged discussion grade for that.
Okay. I think many schools use different student management systems, you know, and I would be an example of that kind of a teacher. We'd have a different student management system, but I have been using Schoology this year in my class alone. So I do, when I give a quiz, I will put it in Schoology because it's just so handy to do the online quiz so quickly. But then I do the same thing. I have to take an average of those grades and then put that into the normal grading
right.
system that we use. So it's a little
right.
little bit awkward there, but it works out. It works well for me the way I do that too. You just have to kind of find a way to put them both together.
Right.
So I can make that work. I can live with that because I have really enjoyed using Schoology. I found the interface, it's interesting to me because you talked about the interface, the Facebook-like interface,
mm-hmm.
That students can make it more of a personal page kind of thing.
Right.
I've been tempted to use Moodle in the classroom, and now in the very latest version of Moodle, they have finally added that kind of aspect.
Right.
But that's one thing I do... I do like Schoology more than Moodle and those types of things because I think the Schoology interface is just more attractive, more simple, not so cluttered. Can you make that comparison? Have you used Moodle also?
I have actually. I have not used Moodle. I've been inside of it because I kept getting these questions. You know, people,
right.
One of the main questions I'm getting on Twitter is, can you give me... It's not so much people, I think, are kind of understanding that Moodle is kind of the third choice now, but I'm often getting the question of Edmodo versus Schoology.
Right.
And I did write a blog this summer and did a little vlog cast about it. And my kind of metaphor for it is that Moodle is a record player, or Moodle is a record, Edmodo is an 8-track, and Schoology is a MP4. That's kind of how I feel about it. I just think that I'm not affiliated with Schoology in any other way than that I use their product,
mm-hmm.
but I believe in it so much that, you know, I think it's important that teachers do understand that Schoology is on several different levels, just a cleaner, more specific, more user-friendly option,
right.
and that your students are inevitably going to have more buy-in with Schoology than with the other two options. And I have friends that are teaching at our elementary and our middle schools that are also using this option with all of those grades. So it's not like this is just a high school option. I have a friend that uses it just as much in a 6th grade class and just as much in a 7th grade class. So it's very age friendly.
Right. I think it can be done. I am using it in my eighth grade class. I would hesitate to use Moodle. I've taken classes in it, but I would hesitate trying to bring that in it into the eighth grade level and having the kids be too successful using that. I don't think they would enjoy it, and therefore they wouldn't use it to its full effectiveness.
Right.
But so I would very much agree with you. Can we talk just for a minute there about, you mentioned at one point parents and feedback. I think Schoology does lend itself to that. What about the parent-student-teacher connection? How have you made that work for you in Schoology?
I talked to a couple people on Twitter about this last night because I unfortunately am kind of in a situation where well, there's two situations. One, we're a community where most households do not have internet at home. And then the second issue is that we just don't have the amount of parent involvement that maybe other schools might have. So what I did was I kind of just went out and researched what some other schools are doing. And I found a couple really good links about what's going on with parent involvement. The way I do use it is when parents do come see me, it's the best thing I have to be able to just automatically pull up a student's profile and click through, and you can see all of their work and their discussions. And I love on the profile that, I don't know if you've noticed this, but the little box that says how many assignments the student has done, how many discussion posts the student has done. And so when I say I'm expecting 25 for the first 3 weeks and this student has 7 or the student has 30, then it's a really good way to show the parents where the student's going to be. But my understanding is that parent profiles are just as easy as a student profile. The parents can actually get the access code from the teacher, and they themselves kind of make a similar profile, and they can essentially see whatever the teacher has decided has opened up to be visual for parents to see. But the cool thing is you can click on your child's name. You're affiliated with your child, but you can't go and click on other students.
Right.
It's completely secure and safe. So you know as a parent that you're only going to be allowed to see your student's work. And it kind of does this cool thing similar to if you Google search your own name, you know, you're going to get something. Schoology does that as well. It'll just pull up your student's name. So you don't have to navigate through anything. It's just kind of a Schoology interface just for your student or just for your child.
And I have done that. I've given out the parent access codes. I don't think anybody has created a profile other than their name, but that's okay. My point is that they can do just as you say, get in there and look and see what things are missing, what things are there, what's the quality of what's in there, what kind of assignments I'm giving. I like them to be aware of how I'm trying to teach them as well. So
definitely.
I think it's a real cool thing that they can have that much access.
And I do think one thing that I am planning for January is to do a parent Schoology PD, just kind of like a little very informal, but still to really inform parents about what Schoology is and then help them to set up their profiles.
Right.
I think that, you know, there is this digital divide, and the majority of parents may not be as comfortable with just getting a website and logging on. They do need some type of instruction, which I think is really important. So I think if teachers are willing to do that, that they'll see a lot more buy-in from parents too. And I think once parents see the access that they can have, that's when you'll really get the feedback about how neat that parent option is.
Right. Well, thank you so much for taking this time to be with us today, Beth. I really appreciate you as a digital native being willing to talk to us, many of whom are not digital natives, including myself. We've come in it from the beginning on and have seen both ways of doing education. And I think that we're pretty well certain those of us listening to the show are the people who definitely are envious of you that have come in and knowing so much, just coming right out of school and coming into your teaching, that's really great. So we appreciate hearing from you today about Schoology and wish you well as you continue on with your school in Birmingham, Alabama, and teaching all of those students in your high school there. So thank you very much.
Great. Thank you so much, Gail. I appreciate it.
Our thanks to Beth, of course, and Gail, great interview. We should have you do more of those. I really enjoy those. She said a couple of things that kind of intrigued me. One was that she spends a couple days at the beginning of the school year kind of introducing Schoology and learning, teaching, but also learning kind of the capabilities of the students and then getting to know the students through their student profiles. I thought that was maybe a great way to kind of understand what kind of class she was dealing with, and she used the technology to do that with students sharing, you know, a little bit about themselves through their own profiles.
Right. I picked up on that too. I did not spend enough time introducing the whole thing in that way, and I plan to do that differently next year. Yeah. Although we have the advantage of really probably knowing our students better when they come in than she does, because
right.
you know, smaller
as they've
setting.
Come up, yeah, and
we've
maybe
all worked with all of them along the line. So
right, exactly. But in departmentalized settings or whatever, too.
Right.
Another thing, or maybe related to that, in your experience, Gail, and I don't think you covered this in the interview. How low down the grade tree, so to speak, can you go with tools like this?
Well, that's interesting to talk about. The reason I was looking for something like this is I'd had in mind for years to try to work Moodle into our eighth grade setting, and I just could not do it. Moodle's latest version, you know, does have a more Facebook-like, more familiar interface at the beginning that you can use, but it's still for kids in eighth grade. It's just not user-friendly, I don't feel.
Right.
So that's why I gravitated towards Schoology.
Sure.
And although I think I would use it in seventh and eighth grade, a lot of that, like everything with technology, depends on the teacher in the classroom and how comfortable they are with it, because I think kids can be made very comfortable with it if the teacher is comfortable with it themselves. And you don't have to use every feature of it, of course, either.
Right.
Beth spoke about the fact that, I'm thinking upper grades, you know, seventh and eighth grade, but she knows people who use it in third and fourth grade. And when she talked about that, I bet we talked about another hour after we were done with our interview. She said she has a good friend that uses it in third grade. And as I thought about our third and fourth grade teacher, who is this year our fourth and fifth grade teacher, she definitely could do this. And I do think that because of her finesse with technology and her interest and enjoyment in it, she could make it happen as well. So
sure.
You know, again, I think that's pretty teacher-dependent.
Right. Yeah, I would agree. I think as I think about Moodle, and that's the one I'm most familiar with, because it's open source, I think that is a common issue or barrier or obstacle that open source software has to overcome, that they're good at the functional. I mean, it's a lot of geeks getting together and building cool functionality, but kind of the usability and the social engineering side of it is not always in the forefront. And sounds like Schoology was kind of made in the mold of or in the image of Facebook, which is a social tool. So makes a lot of sense that it would maybe fit there. Another thing that Beth mentioned was parental involvement, where, you know, she just didn't get the kind of parental involvement, you know, that she would like at their school. So that was a challenge. But then introducing kind of a social tool like this maybe might help. I don't know if you've got any experience on the parent side, Gail.
Yeah, well, this is the first, like, we've done it basically one quarter, so I'm hoping to build that. But I learned some things from her along those lines, too. Just because you build it and you think it's going to work well, you can't assume that everybody's just going to buy in and be in there looking at it like you think you would if you were the parent.
The field of dreams approach, right? Build it and they'll come, right?
So it's going to take some more PR and, you know, to go at it a little differently, just like when we introduced PowerSchool.
Right.
And we still do a little thing every year with PowerSchool, and we're going to have to do that with this in our we always have a information night. All the different grades have an information night like the first week of school where the parents and we have our parents and students come together in eighth grade and we go over the, I guess you'd say, the rules.
Great idea.
And but this kind of thing fits in well there too. So the first time the parents really heard about it was in our eighth grade parent student teacher conferences at the end of the quarter. So
be interesting.
I didn't
do
the best job at introducing it in the beginning of the year, so I'll be doing that more next year.
Yeah,
I think one thing I wanted to mention about it too was one caveat: when you are setting up the course, Sally talked about the setup. The only trouble I had, I think, it's pretty easy, except for the grading thing that you, or the grading period that you mentioned. You have to be a little careful there, and also if you're the administrator of your school. Like I'm using this for all of our, I have a course for all of our faculty tech in service this year. Mm-hmm. And they hand in things to me too during the year back and forth. And so we have a course for that. And I'm a part of the students for that class as well as the administrator for the whole thing. And tried to use two different emails for each to keep them separate. And they got kind of tangled up for a while. I had to actually call and straighten out some things with Schoology because I hadn't set that up right for me being two different people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that's something you might want to think about. And also, one thing, when you talk about free, and this is truly free in the sense that they're doing all the hosting. So when you think about Moodle, that's another thing when you compare the two. You know, Moodle's open source and it's free. But you still need somebody to host that for you.
Right.
You know, if you can't do that yourself, you need to, and there are companies that, you know, will gladly do that for you for a fee.
Mm-hmm.
So unless you really have a source to host it for you, you might be, you know, looking at some cost there too.
Plus the maintenance and, you know, the care and feeding
right.
of it and the updates and so on and so forth. So, Sally, you put together some links. You want to talk us through some of those that you're going to make available?
Actually, yeah, just to point everyone to our show notes page at wellstech.wells.net, we're going to have information about logging into our sample Wells Tech course on Schoology. There'll be information for student access as well as parent access, so you can see both sides of it if you are interested at all in pushing the buttons a little. And then several different blog posts and things that Beth shared, past blog posts that Jason Schmidt has written about Schoology, all really valuable information. So if there are teachers listening, I think this particular podcast is a great launching pad for you to get your feet wet with Schoology. Just check out all those links we have available.
Very good. And Gail, thank you for doing that interview. Good job. And
you're welcome.
Thanks to Beth if she's listening. Let's move on to news and tech.
Well, I thought it was worth mentioning that we've been through the Black Friday, Cyber Monday sale period.
Yes.
I don't know if you guys did any particular shopping or saw any trends or exciting things in technology.
It
seemed like there was a lot of tablets available. it was Tablet Central and from a lot of different names I'd never even heard of. I was kind of surprised how many people jumped into the tablet market mm-hmm. this Christmas season. So.
I was resting comfortably in my bed at 4 a.m. on Friday morning, I'm happy to say.
No mom scenes for you.
That's right. Sally, you were out there.
I was. I'm a Black Friday shopper. I can't wait to get out and be part of it. But I did not go at midnight like many of the crazed shoppers did. Sadly, we looked at the Best Buy ad and had our eye on one of the tablets that was on the front page of the flyer and thought, no, we're not standing in line for 12 hours. And we actually drove by Best Buy and there were people in tents outside of the Best Buy in Mankato and that kind of thing. So we said, sorry, it's not in our future to have one of those tablets we were looking for. And then of all things, I was in the mall around 6 a.m. and the Best Buy mobile store opened in the mall and they had the tablet from the front page of the Best Buy.
There's always a way.
So,
and you didn't even have to endure any pepper spray or any of that stuff.
No blood involved. Nope. Survived well.
Pepper spray free experience.
Yes.
All right. Let's move on to our picks of the week. Gail is our guest. We want to hit lead off.
Sure. My pick is a pick called Slide Shark. And you might remember that we did talk about BrainShark.com quite a while ago. And BrainShark is the application that allows you to record PowerPoints with sound
right.
online mm-hmm. and use them and download them. And then SlideShark is their new baby, so to speak. And what it does is if you're an iPad 2 user and you like to use PowerPoint, you've been kind of stuck. But with this tool, it's an app for the iPad,
And what you can do with it is use PowerPoint presentations on your iPad. So you create them and you upload them, create them on your computer, upload them to this app on the iPad, and then you can, of course, plug in your iPad and project and show your PowerPoint or take it around and show people face-to-face or however you want to use that. I just think it's a neat solution. It's just been out not too long, and they're still working on it. Mm-hmm. They sent quite an exhaustive survey, but a good survey when I signed up, and so I'm looking for some improvements soon. The one thing they definitely need to change is right now there are no hyperlinks that will work in it.
Okay.
So that's something that needs to be changed. It is free right now. If they make all the changes they have their eye on, I'm guessing that eventually it may not be free, because after all, if you had this, there would be no reason for you to buy Keynote from the App Store for $29, mm-hmm. unless you really think that Keynote does what you want better than PowerPoint.
So I think
this could be quite competitive, and being that it's free now, I'm using it.
So this kind of crosses the Mac PC divide here. If you're getting PowerPoints or need to use PowerPoints, this is a way to get them on the iPad, because of course Keynote would do that for you. And those who are Mac lovers would say, well, why not just use Keynote? But there's certainly reasons that you're going to have to use PowerPoints at some point. So good pick. Slide Shark. Sally.
My turn, and today I'm going to point you to a Web 2.0 tool that I discovered recently. It's called Magisto at magisto.com. That's M-A-G-I-S-T-O. And Magisto is for video editing online. And the hook is, the fun thing about this site is that it will sort through your videos and magically select shorter clips of them and merge them into a highlight video. So let's say you've taken an hour's worth of video clips here and there on your ski trip or whatever it might be. Well, you upload all those different little video clips that you've taken, and it figures out where the people are, where the ending finale moments are and the things that you're taping or whatever it might be. And it hones down your videos, so you don't have to watch them all and come up with those highlight moments. It does that for you, and it does a really good job. I've watched a lot of their different samples and things. So all you do is upload the videos and push the magic button, and just like that, you have a highlight video.
Interesting.
The one drawback that they admit is that it doesn't handle rotated videos well. So particularly like cell phone users maybe would take video in a more of a portrait mode instead of a landscape mode, and it can't switch those around. It needs to be landscape, basically, video, wider than taller. And once you give it those things, then you push the magic button and you're all set. And it seems like a fun tool.
It does. Sally, is there sound? Is there audio also with that, like the audio that goes with?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So
sure.
What you should do, Sally, is plug in a few of Kevin's sermons and see what comes out.
See what
get a highlight reel of his sermons, yes.
Big finale.
That's right.
I have some instant uses for that. I'm going to give that a try.
Yeah, that sounds great. There's a lot of field trips that you take videos of and youth group activities, and that'd be very creative. Very good. That's Magisto, magical video editing in a click. My pick is probably one of the most low-tech picks I've ever had. In fact, it really has nothing to do with technology, but more about productivity. Those that have been longtime listeners to the show will know that I talk a lot about David Allen's book, Getting Things Done. I even teach some courses that are kind of based on that. And the pick this week is maybe a good gift idea for the person who needs to get a little bit more productive. Well, you have to tell them that. These are wallets for both men and women. Now, they've recently launched a women's line. And these aren't just any wallets. These are wallets that actually contain in them, kind of the feature of it is a little pad of paper and a pen. I've been using one of these wallets for about 3 or 4 years now. And the concept is that when ideas come or when to-dos come to mind, you want to capture them. You don't want just to force your brain to try and remember them till a point in the future where you can resurrect that thought and do something or act on it. You want to write it down. And what better way to write something down than to have a pad of paper that's always with you? So in the case of a man, it's his wallet. In the case of a lady, I think it's a kind of an extended wallet that could be used as a, you know, a pocketbook and kept in the purse. But you always have a pen and you always have a pad of paper with it. And these aren't necessarily cheap, but I would say that they are high quality. They come with a pen, of course, and refills both on the ink and the paper. So they're, you know, they'll last you a while, but they're nicely crafted. And I think the wallet that I have is was like $70, so it's not cheap. There are cheaper ones, and the ladies' pocketbook is, I think, about $50, $40 or $50. There'll be links in the show notes. But they call these GTD, or Getting Things Done wallets, and really have helped my productivity. So I'm rarely without a tool to write a thought down or a to-do down or something, that a phone number or an email address that somebody's given me. Just a great little low-tech tool. And what I do with that when I come back into the office where I, you know, where I've got my inbox, is I just take the pull the paper off the pad, put it right in the inbox, and then I've got it right there and deal with it. Put it into my electronic system at that point. So
I'm loving all of this, except that deal with it part means that potentially I get more work to do. So yeah. That's where the rub is.
It's going to come back to you eventually. It's just, it's going to be on your terms.
Too, Martin, we do know who we are.
That's right.
Those of us who need those wallets.
All right. So just a little low-tech pick of the week for you this week. I'll get back to the digital stuff next week. Let's move on to, actually we have a WellsNet feature this week, Sally.
We do. We wanted to make mention that now that our Advent and Christmas season has arrived, the Streams seasonal channel is up with Christmas music for your listening pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Very popular.
Streams, that's part of our Wells.net offerings, and it is our media channel. And we have a lot of different flavors of streams. We have video, archive video. We have podcasts like Wells Tech and Daily Devotions. And we often host live events on streams as well as having images. But the radio is running all the time, and you can just click in and listen to internet radio on a variety of channels. And like I said, at this time of year, we bring up our seasonal channel and have Wells artist with all sorts of great Christmas music. So we'll have a link in the show notes directly to that seasonal channel on streams. Might be appropriate for you to include that link on your own church or school website.
Sure.
So that those who visit your site can make use of Streams Radio as well.
We'll be playing at the end of the show one of the songs that you would likely hear on that channel, some Advent music. Then we wanted to remind everybody of a couple of live streaming opportunities, two concerts that are available, one at Martin Luther College on December 3rd and 4th, 7 p.m. and 4 p.m. respectively, where the choirs there and the folks who play musical instruments will be performing. And so you'll want to tune into that. And also at Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary, the men's choir there is going to be singing on December 11th at 3 p.m. So go to the show notes if you want to look up those locations and times and how to watch those things live. Always, always extremely well done. So two opportunities there to watch live streaming. Let's move on to community feedback.
A couple of things to share this week. First up, via Pastor Dan Walters, I was hooked up with a Twitter user named Adam Pringle, and Adam was asking a question about how to auto-download Wells Podcast in iTunes. And I think that's a great question, and I would think iTunes probably confounds a lot of people, Martin, because it's not the easiest interface to just click around and figure out sometimes. But one of the things that you can do with the Wells podcasts that are available on iTunes is set it up to automatically download to your computer. And then each time you launch iTunes, any new podcast will show up. And you do that with the subscribe feature. I was able to point Adam to some help on that that's available through the iTunes help system online. So we'll have a link to that in the show notes. If you want to automatically receive all those great podcasts or one or more of them, you can get daily devotions. You can get daily Bible readings that take you through your Bible in 3 years. And you can get the Wells Tech podcast all through iTunes.
Very good.
And then next up, we had some tweeting going on, and that was actually from our good friend Gail Potratz. Gail, you were telling us about the Screen Chomp app for iPad.
Right.
Can you tell us a little more about that?
This is like having a second pick of the week here. So.
What a treat.
Good. Great. Sally, you would love this because it's actually from TechSmith.
I love everything TechSmith.
Yeah, yes, you do, and I do too. They're very... this is an app that allows you to, I'm using it on my iPad, and it allows kids or teachers to write, draw, create. You can bring in photos. You create something on the screen, and you're talking about it as you're creating it. So you could, it could be explaining directions, explaining how to do a certain math problem, explaining how to do something in art, whatever the subject is. And so you draw it, and you it saves. It gives you some space so you can save it in the cloud and go back and get the ones you've done before and show them again. Really sweet, really easy. I had my my little 4 and 5 year old grandsons over the holiday, and of course that's one of the first things I want to do is play with the iPad. So they were doing this, and we were showing each other how to do things they had learned in school, and doing just some crazy stuff. And it's so easy, it's so intuitive. Anybody can do it. So very good teaching tool. Teacher can instruct. Kids can show each other. Saves it. You can pull up the good ones if you want to reuse them again later. It's pretty sweet.
So is it a drawing program?
Yep. It has a couple different drawing tools. And, again, you can bring the camera roll in, so you could bring in pictures. Okay. It reminds me of, I think I tweeted about Show Me, which is another app that has an online repository for all teachers to collect things on the computer. Mm-hmm. This is the same kind of thing. It's just recording your voice as you show how to do something at the same time and basically saving it.
Okay. So kind of like a screencast meets illustration,
yes,
meets presentation,
exactly,
tool. Okay. Very cool. Mm-hmm. Is that it for community feedback, Sally?
That'll do it for this week, yes.
Okay. Next week, actually... we are going to have another interview, Jason Jasperson from Minnesota Valley Lutheran, out your way, Sally. He's going to talk about liturgical art and a website that he's got going to encourage Wells artists of all shapes and sizes and all medium to get involved with. So please be sure to tune in next week for that. And we also will be talking about our blogging exercises. Back at the beginning of the year, Sally and I made a contract with each other that we're going to try and blog once a week. So we're going to talk about how that went, some of the challenges with that, and how we can perhaps do a little bit better, at least in my
case.
Hey,
you know, I've got a week to backdate a whole bunch of blog posts. Thanks for the warning.
All right. All right, so that's all next week. Let's, Gail, thank you very much for joining us. Blessings,
sure,
on your work there in New London and your Advent preparations. And Sally, thank you, as always, for all the work you do. Let's close the show with some Advent music from Revelation, the musical group out of Wisconsin Lutheran College. A Voice Cries Out from their album Led by the Light. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Straight in the dark. Shall be called.